The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Welcome to The Money Show this evening. It's good to have you with us. We'll catch up with the Chief Executive of Eskom in just a moment, Andre De Reiter, with these daily media briefings, taking up a lot of his time, those briefings are. And it's all to do with evidence, very strong evidence, of sabotage, cutting through steel supports and things. Find out exactly from him what the situation is and if there's an update on that particular tale today that broke earlier on this morning. We'll also speak to the chief executive of Tiger Brands. Noel Doyle is his name. Noel Doyle will give us a perspective on the results of Tiger Brands today. And he won't be able to comment directly on the big story of the day, which is not yet being acknowledged as a story by AVI, but lots of reports in the United States, or at least one very good and solid and credible report in the United States, that the company that owns Cadbury's and also Oreos, that's a company called Mondelez, one of the big global food producers, is looking at buying AVI, or at least parts of AVI, in a week that Heineken came and pounced on the maker of Savannah Cider, that's Distell, and not long since, of course, Pioneer Foods was taken over by PepsiCo. So the globe is circling in a market where it sees value and few others do. That and many more stories coming up this evening on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
With Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
We're seeing rising levels of lawlessness practically everywhere. This week's scariest stories around the rising incidents of kidnapping and details around the Moti kids kidnapping and an apparent ransom that was paid. We've also seen rising incidences of the destruction of Transnet infrastructure. And today, confirmation from Eskom, something that's been believed in circles for some time, that there is evidence of deliberate damage to property at Eskom designed to disrupt the power network. Pylon near its Letabo power station in the Free State, deliberately cut, it looks like, with either gas burners or with angle grinders, Andre De Reiter. I mean, how specific can you be, Chief Executive of Eskom, on exactly what was used and exactly how the sabotage was carried out?
Bruce, what happened was that 8 24-millimeter rods that anchor stays that keep this pylon upright were cut 6 o'clock on Wednesday evening, causing the pylon to topple on to another line. We have two lines feeding the coal conveyor belts that keep our Letabo power station, which generates about 3,600 megawatts of electricity. So had this attempt been successful, Letabo would have run out of coal and we would have lost all of those megawatts, which would have probably precipitated stage 6 load shedding. It is clear that these rods were cut deliberately. There's no way that 8 of these rods can fail simultaneously. Whether they used a hacksaw or an angle grinder, it's too early to say, but it's clear that there was no metal fatigue, no corrosion, and these rods definitely did not shear due to stress. Adjacent cables remained standing, so it was definitely not wind. You can only attribute this to criminality. Now, what's interesting is that nothing was stolen, so this was not an economic crime. This was an attempt to disrupt power supply to a critical piece of infrastructure that helps us to generate electricity.
Is this the first confirmed incident of deliberate sabotage that you've reported? Because we've heard reports of suspicion of people mucking about in distribution centers and all that sort of stuff within the belly of Eskom. This is slightly off the property, but is this the first incident of confirmed sabotage?
This is the first one, Bruce, that I believe we can say unequivocally is an act of sabotage. There have been other incidents where you become suspicious, where you think, you know, this is terribly coincidental. How can a water valve accidentally be opened under very suspicious circumstances? But I've always been very reluctant to use the word sabotage because of all of the negative associations that it carries. I think in this case, I'm now prepared to call this sabotage.
It looks like a fairly remote area as well. It looks like a fairly isolated area, an area to which somebody who would know the power line structures might go. They know they won't be watched. They know they've got time. They're doing it in the early evening and sort of late dusky end of the day. It feels like this is somebody who understands the infrastructure of Eskom fairly well and understands the consequences of cutting those stays, causing that particular pylon onto topple and potentially then onto the power lines. This is orchestrated and carefully thought through.
It was clearly done by somebody who knew exactly what the consequences would be of putting these two power lines out of action. As you correctly state, it's not in an area that is typically subject to economic crime. We know where those areas are, where people remove members on pylons. And typically they don't collapse the pylons. They steal a few members that they then can go and sell for scrap metal. And these are economic crimes probably driven by unemployment and poverty. But these pylons that now collapsed at Letaba Power Station are far removed from human settlements. So it is indeed highly suspicious activity that took place there.
And again, any leads as to how, where, who and why?
I can not hazard any guesses on who would commit such acts. The question that I think should now be asked is who benefits from such a huge potential disruption to electricity supply in South Africa?
Nobody benefits from it unless you've got a particular motive to destabilize the Eskom infrastructure, to destabilize Eskom management, and perhaps to get people in Eskom like yourself replaced, because it would suggest a level of ineptitude if the grid was to keep on failing. And I think that seems to be an agenda right now. Would you concur?
I think that that would be potentially one of the intended consequences. There has been a narrative out there perpetrated by former participants in the state capture enterprise that I should be dismissed, allegedly, for failing to keep the lights on. But I think that exacerbating load shedding clearly would contribute to this narrative, and that may indeed be an explanation.
How are you feeling in terms of the... I mean, are you feeling under siege?
I think that the current public pressure on Eskom is not helping. The public pressure on me is not making my job any easier. I've got a full-time job to do just to run the entity, having to spend a lot of time addressing issues around sabotage, holding hour-long media conferences every day does take up a fair amount of time. So it is definitely not assisting in enabling us to try and turn the organization around.
And in terms of the stability of the power grid, you've returned the units that let us down at the beginning of this week back to service. Stage one due to come to an end at 9 p.m. tonight. As far as you can tell, relative stability, at least over the weekend.
Yes, we are helped by lower ambient temperatures, so people use air conditioning less and so forth, so that's positive. The outlook for the weekend is positive. The outlook for next week is cautiously optimistic if we don't lose major units, but as I think all South Africans realize by now, prognosticating about the state of the generation system is something that should be undertaken with some caution.
André de Ruyter, Chief Executive of Eskom. Thank you very much for joining us this evening on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
With Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
The other big story on the day, of course, is a report out of the United States that AVI is in discussions with Mondelez, one of the world's biggest food producers. And speculation is that Mondelez may or may not be keen on buying everything that AVI has. And it's got lots and lots of brands and its banner, including I and J, and including Baker's Biscuits and Ciro Coffee and Five Roses Tea and many other household brands that you use all the time. We went wait for confirmation in South Africa. And of course, PepsiCo bought Pioneer Foods just a couple of years ago. This week, Heineken bought Distell. Reports now of Mondelez and AVI. Noel Doyle is the chief executive of Tiger Brands. We'll chat results in just a moment. Are you feeling a little bit left out of the deal-making party, Noel?
Not at all, Bruce. In fact, you know, this year we celebrate our 100th year. We're the largest African FMCG company. And I guess it puts it up to us to make sure that our shareholders have enough faith in us as a management team that they believe in what we can do rather than sell out to a multinational. So it's a nice challenge for us to maintain our status as an independent African food giant.
Do people come sniffing around, though? I mean, I don't know how this process works. Do they sort of say, you know what, we really like your beacon chocolate or your tastic rice, or maybe we like everything. Do you get calls like that ever?
Yeah, over the years, Bruce, we've certainly had, as you put it, sort of people coming to have a look, kick the wheels. I think one of the biggest challenges, and it'll probably be a similar challenge with an AVI transaction, is the breadth of our portfolio, you know, from home care, personal care, the whole spectrum, all the way to, you know, very commoditized segments like maize and flour. So it's a difficult transaction, I think, for any individual firm to take without serious execution risk. You know, that's given us a degree of defense. And I guess, you know, if I'm very frank, you know, our performances, you know, in recent times have probably not been ones that would excite potential vendors, maybe. You know, certainly the AVI team have consistently, over a long period of time, done an amazing job in terms of both the performance of the health of those brands that they've got and the way in which they've managed to produce superior financial returns. I guess that's also made them more attractive, if I'm being brutally honest and hold the mirror up to ourselves, Bruce.
Tiger Brands had a rough couple of years. I mean, you know, from bread price fixing all the way through to issues around food poisoning, of course, which is a big issue which has yet to be resolved, and there's an unknown potential liability there. Earlier this year, a 732 million rand recall of canned vegetables. There's been quite a lot of self-inflicted harm.
I think that's right, Bruce. But I think if you look at the results that we posted today and you take out those hopefully once-off items, you know that there are some nascent signs of a recovery in the performance of the underlying business. Our operating profit is up 13%, still not back to the levels of 2019, but good growth in both halves of the year, despite some challenges, if you like, on either end of our business. You know, the bread category is quite challenging and our fruit deciduous exports business quite challenging and were drags on the earnings growth. But we seem to be getting our act together, I think, you know, in terms of our core business, in terms of the things that are under our control. The big challenge for us now going forward is to take the base and look for growth on the top line, look for some acquisition and hope that acquisition activity, you know, and hope that, you know, we're gradually winning shareholder confidence that would allow us to use a very healthy balance sheet to make carefully considered and probably not massively transformational acquisitions, but to start to get back on a growth path both here and outside South Africa.
You do disclose today that you're looking to expand into health categories. Are there specific acquisitions, specific deals that you're looking at?
No, Bruce, I think those comments really relate to the fact that health and nutrition is a big driver for us. And within the VC fund that we established earlier this year, that is one of the areas that we are particularly focused on. But there's certainly nothing in terms of an acquisition directly in Tiger that's on the cards at this point in time.
Well, I'm reading the former PepsiCo chair Indra Noori's book, and she talks a lot of the journey of making companies healthy. And PepsiCo, of course, severely criticized for the sugar content of its drinks, and they've got a big foods business as well. What I'm curious about is why food companies, you know, consistently keep using the excuse of saying, we're just adapting to the taste profile of our customers, and we're adding more salt and more sugar and more of this and more fat, and because our increasingly obese customers really like that stuff. And then on the same side, and PepsiCo did this, then you start a health foods business as well. It feels a bit Machiavellian. If I may be so bold, on one side, do that, and then bulk up with healthier stuff.
Yeah, Bruce, I think there's been an evolution in the industry and a recognition that you know we have to play a much more responsible role in people's lives, and I think you know you're starting to see the sort of food industry try to move ahead of forced regulation. And certainly one of the things that we quite focused on, you know, as we look at renovating the portfolio that we've got, is how we can make our food healthier, what we can change in terms of its composition that will make it healthier. Nobody wants to be in a position where we have to, either from a moral or from a very pragmatic perspective, where we have to kind of suddenly catch up with regulation. As you know, South African regulation generally is a very fast follower in terms of global trends. And so we would very much like to see that we will move proactively rather than reactively. So I don't think you'll see us wanting to sort of bulk up or push unhealthy foods and then try and kind of hide behind that by health and nutrition. I think we'll follow all of the trends, you know, even in spaces like snackification, which maybe, you know, in its terminology talks towards unhealthiness. You'll see as we've been developing some of our offerings in toddler food, some of our offerings even in terms of, you know, our jungle energy snacks, etc. We've been working hard on formulations that really are healthier for people. There's a long road to go, and you can't push back, you know, radically against the taste profile of your consumer, but you can play your role proactively in terms of educating the consumers, in terms of not being, reactionary towards moves to label food properly so that people can make informed decisions. And I hope that Tiger Brands, in line with many of the bigger food companies, will be playing a more positive and a more proactive role in that space.
You're warning of higher food prices. We know because we see it in our food baskets. You're warning of even further price increases. And of course, that's inevitable considering global dislocation and the pressures happening on a global food front. Reserve Bank yesterday raising in interest rates, worrying about inflation. Are you worried about 22 from that perspective?
Yes, we certainly are, Bruce. We believe that there's actually quite a... We're in a little bubble. It may seem, you know, quite strange to say that, but in the run-up to the Christmas period, you find that manufacturers like us, we generally fix the prices with our retailers in terms of committing to pricing for things like the Black Friday promotion. And we've seen some big spikes in costs, say, since August and September when we set those promotional pricing. So we're locked in to certain pricing levels that will reflect on the shelves until Christmas. I think after Christmas, you're going to see another little mini burst of inflation as we seek to recover the kind of input costs that we're currently in this quarter having to swallow because of the commitments that we've made for Christmas pricing and Christmas promotional activities. So, Bruce, I certainly think that we're going to see a little wave of inflation. You know, we looked since we signed off our budget, which was signed off in September, the annualized price moves and cost push just on raw materials. So we're not talking about any of our other input costs like fuel in the logistics chain would add 3%. We would need to add 3% to our pricing just to recover those costs in rand. So definitely some wave of inflation coming probably in the first quarter of next year. And we have to get as much costs out of the system as possible for us as a premium price product to try and keep, we managed to grow our market share a little bit this year without losing on our margins. So we've got to work very hard. You know, we're not just going to sort of sit back and let that wave wash all over us. But I do think the consumer is going to feel it. And we're going to have to watch the levels of demand quite carefully into the beginning of next year.
Noel Doyle, Chief Executive at Tiger Brands.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Listening to that, Tato Mashiho, who is a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Probably the most interesting story on the day, Tato, is not the result stories, because there have been plenty today, but it's the possibility of a buyout offer for all or part of AVI. Have you seen any more on that?
It's been quite an interesting end to the week, so to speak, with many things which have happened. As you mentioned, the potential buyer's offer for AVI, which obviously would be very, very significant and material, and I suppose further contributing to the reduced number of counters on the JSE. But at least in this sense, it's a company which may potentially be leaving for a good reason, being a buyout as opposed to delisting for other reasons.
Yeah, we watch that space. No confirmation locally on the deal. What do you make of the Tiger Brands results today? Profits under pressure, lots of good reasons for it, but it is a company that is constantly sort of tripping over its own feet.
Tiger Brands has famously had a number of issues over the past decade, even more, I suppose, if you want to go back as far as the bread pricing scandal of over a decade ago, then to the misadventure in Nigeria with the Dangote flour mills over 5 years ago. And, of course, the unfortunate incident of listeriosis a bit more recently. And this year had another mishap, if we can call it that, with regard to the recall amongst the Kru brand. The second half was definitely significantly worse for them than the first half, which they seem to be trading relatively well. But when one takes the recall into account, along with the social unrest, it cost them around 700 million rand. Steps for the year ending up about 4% down, even though we did see some revenue growth out of Tigers overall. So a bit of a difficult period for them, it's fair to say.
And then on to PEP, which has had a huge recovery. They're back, like so many companies that have been reporting recently, to 2019 levels. There's a really strong recovery coming through particular businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed, a very strong recovery from PEP. Heads up over 115%. And a significant trading scene in the clothing division. They mentioned that they're planning to open over 300 stores in the coming year, which I suppose shows you the optimism and the confidence in terms of the outlook. And the prior period, obviously, the base was a lot lower given the initial lockdowns and reduced trading levels, but very encouraging performance from PEP. They were able to pay down quite a bit of debt due to strong cash generation, which further boosted their earnings. So quite encouraging to see that performance.
The JSE lost money over 2 days, Thursday, Friday, but went to record levels Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The outlook for the market certainly seems to be clouded by the Reserve Bank's commentary on the economy yesterday, the raising of interest rates. We saw a very sharp pullback in banks, in local retail, and of course the currency continues to be massively vulnerable.
Yes, indeed. A combination of, at a global level, the risk-off sentiment once some of the European countries like Austria and Germany announced partial lockdowns. So we've seen U.S. Treasury yields firming up. And the 25 basis points hike not really enticing bond investors so much due to the dovish commentary from the central bank. And so we have seen a bit of weakness on the currency. So it has been, I suppose, a rough session, so to speak. Even in the land of cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin has fallen significantly this past week, which suggests that correlation with risk on and equities is perhaps a bit higher than most people would think. But our local market has had a bit of a rough week, and we can only hope that going forward the outlook will look a bit more rosy, obviously at a global level, which will impact how
Thank you, Tatl Mashiqo, who is a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Welcome to The Money Show. We're going to talk to Teresa Norton. She's the founder of a sheet company called Shepherd. We'll talk all about that in just a moment in our Friday file. But coming up on The Next Money Show, an exclusive interview with Indra Noori, the former chief executive and chairman of PepsiCo in our Other People's Money feature. She ran the business up until 2019 and has written a book all about it. Richard Friedland, the Netcare chief executive, to take us through financial results and look forward to COVID, not look forward, but look ahead, perhaps, to COVID-19's fourth wave. And Isam Tlanga from Alexander Forbes has been reading a business book, which he will review for us next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Teresa Norton with us, the founder of Shepherd. It's a bedding business, and they do 100% pure linen. Teresa, forgive my complete ignorance, but where does linen come from? What's the origins of linen? How do you make linen versus cotton, for example?
So linen, how's it, Bruce? Nice to be on the show. Thank you. So linen is actually, it's made from flax. So, and that originates from Europe. It's grown in Europe. There's optimal grain conditions in Europe where flax is grown. And yes, so it's from the plant flax.
Okay, so it's an organic material, it's a natural material. Do you import the linen completed from that? We don't have a linen industry in South Africa, do we?
No, we don't. So everything is imported, and then we sew it up locally. So I have a local team that sews up all the linen for me. And yeah, so everything is imported.
Well, what's the attraction for you? I mean, what got you into the linen business?
I've actually always had a crazy obsession for bedding. So I think my first paycheck ever was spent on luxury linen. And I actually still have that set today. So I, from a small age, I would spend hours in my room, you know, dressing my bed and making it look amazing. I know it sounds ridiculous.
It is a bit, it's a little bit concerning, but please carry on. Yeah.
I love bedding. I love the feel of it. I love the way, you know, I love climbing into clean sheets and, you know, it gives a good night's rest. So yeah, it's a bit of an obsession.
No, look, a good bed with great sheets is a very, very happy place. There's no question about it. You said you spent your first paycheck on linen. Was it linen? Because we refer to cotton sheets as linen, even though it's not linen. Mm. And I wonder if the origins of bed sheets are linen, if you know what I mean.
So people refer to it as linen, but this is 100% linen. So my first paycheck was actually spent on Egyptian cotton linen.
Right.
So back then, I think that was like probably 15 years ago. It's a long time ago. And yeah, I don't think linen was really available back then, you know, like this flax linen. So that was what I knew back then. And yeah, so now, yeah. But it's Egyptian cotton's also really lovely. But once you try flax linen, it's incredible. It's really lovely.
I've only ever had one linen garment before. It was a shirt and I found it scratchy. Why are linen sheets that a superior sleeping experience versus say, percale or versus cotton?
So linen, our linen specifically has been enzyme washed. So if you go to, say, a Country Road, for instance, they have that French linen range. Our linen is that soft. It actually isn't scratchy at all. And that's what customers are so surprised when they feel our linen and they receive it. The first thing they say is, oh, my word, this is so soft and incredibly, you know, soft against my skin. It takes them at shock, you know. So yeah, I think
does it crease?
I mean, Excuse me?
Doesn't it crease as well? Because I just found, I'm not a snappy dresser. I think that would be a fair comment. And so I found a scratchy linen shirt that creased a lot. I was like, ah, the stuff doesn't work. And so people are more fastidious, actually, perhaps.
The creases actually add to the beauty of linen. It's so, like, so I obviously use linen bedding on our bed. And it's so beautiful to look at, the way it catches the light. And, you know, it's just something else, you know. And my husband as well, we've had all sorts of linen on our bed before. And he's just, okay, when I put that on, and I'm not just saying it, he's just like, I absolutely love the way it feels against my skin.
You've done the job, Teresa. How do you reach the market? I mean, do you do everything online? Do you go through boutiques? Do you go through interior designers? How do you get to market?
So at the moment, we're mostly online. We use Instagram a lot. It's just amazing what Instagram has done for us. It's, you know, you can promote ads, you can target who you want to speak to. Is it women, men, you know, kids? So mostly it's all online, but we have been approached by quite a few interior decorators and physical shops to start stocking our linen. So we're pretty excited about that as well.
That's really nice to hear, Teresa. Good luck with it. I really hope that you go from strength to strength. The founder of Linen Cellar, manufacturer of linen goods, particularly bed sheets and duvets. The business is called Shepherd. Her name is Teresa Norton. It's a lovely growth story, a lovely innovative story of a South African entrepreneur who's doing wonderful things on our Friday file this evening. Coming up in a moment, the Brutal Biz Quiz. What is the prime lending rate? Rates moved yesterday. The prime lending rate is what? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Give us a call and come and play the Brutal Biz Quiz.
702.
Bruce is on the Money Show.
Lines are open. If you'd like to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening, we'd love to have you. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Lebohang in Soshanguve this evening. What is the prime lending rate?
Good evening, Bruce.
That's not the answer, Lebohang. That is not the answer. What is the answer, please?
Can you repeat it again?
What is the prime lending rate?
Oh, it's 3.75.
That is the repo rate. The prime lending rate.
Yeah, it's 25 base points.
I know it's 25 basis points higher than it was, but what is the prime lending rate? The repo rate is 3.75% now. It was at 3.5%. It's up by 25 basis points, and the prime lending rate is always higher than the repo rate. So what is the prime lending rate, Lebohang? The rate
it's
the bank five. Will charge you. No, Lebohang. Yo, I tried. Like you to call, otherwise I win the Brutal Biz Quiz on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. What is the prime lending rate? I'm appalled at you. You deserve a lesson in interest rates. I think we need to do like 3 hours of interest rates to get you on track here. What is the prime lending rate? The Reserve Bank did raise the repo rate by 25 basis points to 3.75% yesterday, which means that the prime lending rate goes up as well. And the governor warning of the risks of short-term inflation outlook are expected to be on the upside, not down. Clifford in Alberton, help.
It's 7.5%.
It's not, Clifford. It's not. We come from record low interest rates. Rates went up by 25 basis points yesterday. Good evening.
Yeah, it's 6.75.
No, you guys must read your bank statements. How does nobody know the prime lending rate? This is appalling. Money Show producers, you're fired for not making us talk more about interest rates. Unless George says this, of course. Radio, go off, man. George,
off?
Haragua. It is. I think it's off. But you're on. Hello, George.
It's 15%.
No, George. What has happened to the Money Show audience? on a Friday night. Oh, my word. Robert, please spare me. No, Robert's not going to spare me. Robert has got no empathy whatsoever. I cannot believe that the simplest, most publicized event over the last 24 hours is getting no love from you this evening. Lines are lighting up and everybody thinks they know, but people are guessing. How do you not know the prime lending rate? It astounds me. You don't borrow enough money. Heinz borrows money, I hope.
Hi, this is yourself, Heinz from Crisis Life, discovering tourist economy. How are you?
Very good, Heinz. I didn't hear a word of that. What is the answer, please, Heinz?
7.25, sir.
7.25! Oh, Jesus. Absolutely right. I cannot believe. Oh, my word. Anyway, listen, one last question for you because we are out of time. Soweto Gold, Amarula and Klipdrift are going to be owned by which Dutch company?
Beg your pardon, sir. Could you repeat the question?
Soweto Gold craft beer, Amarula liquor and Klipdrift brandy are soon going to be owned
Heineken.
By
Heineken.
Heinz loves Heineken and Heinz becomes the wizard of the biz quiz. I am officially disappointed in everybody who didn't get the interest rate question right. 7.25% is the prime lending rate. I'm going to say it until I go blue. But well done to you, Heinz. You, by default, I think, are the whiz of the biz quiz this evening. We had so many lovely questions. We worked so hard on the biz quiz. And then we get stuck on the simplest question of the year. In a moment, the best bits of the money show. That part of the biz quiz certainly doesn't go into the best bit. Well, unless you've got a really bizarre sense of humor. Oh, my word. 16% prime. Maybe that's a forecast. Oh, hell.